What a weekend. Welcome, everyone. We are live, pal. Gonna bring Andrew up right now. Andrew, what an insane weekend, but I'm going to start this. We're not going to go right to the drama. We're going to go to a short story about the guest that we are bringing on today. So yes, I'm at sir. All Out in the parking lot, and I look over to my left, and I go, wow, who's that handsome man there dressed to the nines? And someone goes, oh, that's John Alba. And I was like, that is John Alba. So I walk over to him, slap high fives, handshakes, and we're sitting there talking. And John is just everyone passing him by. John's like, he's like John Travolta's character in Saturday Night Fever. People just pointing at him. What's going on? He's just getting the point. Everyone coming up to him.
He's a stud.
He's an absolute rock star. Even young Izzy comes up to him, and I got to meet young Izzy, very nice young lady. And I said, John, we need to get you back on the show. He said he wanted to do it. Then all hell broke loose about 8 hours later, and we hit up John. He's back. John Alba is on the show again. John, what is going on, my friend?
It's so funny that you said the John Travolta analogy. When I worked for Major League Baseball, they used to call me Danny Zuko.
I love it. You know what? A little bit. I could, you know, you have it. Listen, it's that tri-state area thing. You know, here's the thing, Garrett. You gave John a pound. When John and I see each other, we give each other the double-sided Italian kiss. That's how we
Oh, yeah. I'll be seeing you in a couple weeks. Assuming that AEW exists in a couple weeks, I'll be seeing you at Greensboro.
Listen, I'm going to wear my blue sports coat so we can match.
Okay.
It'll be perfect.
Okay, so should I wear blue? I'll wear blue if you want.
Yeah. We'll do twinskies the whole time.
Sounds good.
All right, so we're going to start with the scrum stuff that happened, because John was right there. Now, John, I'm going to give you a bunch of credit here, because you were sort of the voice of reason on Twitter for everything that was going down. And I was just kind of checking out your tweets because, you know, obviously I want to read someone who knows what they're doing. But you were just like, look, this is what's happening. I'm here, and it's insane, but here's sort of the story. So let's just start with the scrum. You were there. Like when Punk started to make his own boss, who was sitting to his left, uncomfortable, and you can see this in this, like Tony Khan's face is kind of like going every which way. Like, what were you as someone in the media, someone who's been around this, you host a podcast with Matt Hardy, who knows the pro wrestling business better than anybody. Like, what was your immediate thought about what was going on?
Can I ask you real quick before I answer that? Now, when you say voice of reason during it, what makes you say that? Because I will respond to that based on what you say there. I'm genuinely curious.
So on Twitter, everything gets retweeted. Everybody's paraphrasing. And you basically said, hey, guys, here's what's going on. Everybody's thinking this is a work, but this is the real story. I'm back here. It's not a work. Not everything is a work. And when you said that, I pulled back a little bit and I was like, uh-oh, this is maybe something I need to pay a little bit more attention to.
Yeah. So I guess this is where my background in covering real sports and TV news stuff kicks in. Your job as a reporter is to observe and state what is happening with context when you're covering something live and you're providing live coverage. So when Punk was going on this, I guess we can call it a rant, right? When he's going on this tangent, I felt it was very important to try and give as much context that I knew from my knowledge of Punk's situation with Scott Colton to the audience who may or may not be actually watching the press conference live, and simply state with as much context as possible what was being put forth out on that microphone. And I tried to observe body language during it as well. I think people that are in a room can pick up on body language and those small little idiosyncrasies that maybe you can't see over a stream or you can't read necessarily just through a tweet in and of itself. So that was kind of my approach in covering it live. And I mentioned this today on Twitter that afterwards, it really took about 24 hours for it to sink into me that there was about 15 to 20 people there who firsthand saw what I think, and I'm sure both of you probably agree, will end up being a transformative night in the history of AEW, for better or for worse.
And Andrew, so Andrew and I are sort of doing the same thing, right? Because I wasn't there. I left. I don't like the way the scrums are run. I don't like being a part of that. But Andrew was also watching it from the same sort of viewpoint as me. And so we were kind of texting back and forth. But Andrew, like, as you're watching this, you're not there. You're telling me, like, oh, man, the one show that I miss, this, all this stuff happens. But, like, what did you see from what you were seeing on Twitter and from the actual video?
So I did not stay up to watch the scrum live. And the only reason why I realized what was going on is that I was getting an insane amount of text messages at like 1 o'clock in the morning or midnight, whatever, you know. Yeah, it was like almost like 1 o'clock when it went on. And I'm like, okay, something's going on. So I turned it on, and the initial thing that I felt was like, oh, okay, he's building a great story for MJF. He's building a story to maybe do something with the Elite, you know. And like, I'm not thinking that this man has lost his mind, you know. I'm nowhere near there. But the longer I'm listening to this, and you know, John hit the nail on the head. The body language said a lot. Punk's body language. First of all, he started that thing off so aggressive with Nick Houseman for no reason, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he came out swinging to Nick. And I'm like, poor Nick. I'm like, he didn't really say anything. He was just like couple. I think the conference, the AEW feed was maybe like a minute early or a minute late. So like, we didn't get the initial question, but like, there was nothing.
There was no initial question. It was simply an opening statement. Nick got called on, and as Nick was about to talk, Punk started with an opening statement. And a few people did ask me that. There was no opening question whatsoever.
And give the relation, just for people who don't know, what is the relation there? Why would Punk go so offensive or so aggressive on that? Is there some sort of relationship? Sure.
I know Nick Houseman covered CM Punk's trial firsthand in Chicago because he was kind of boots on the ground there. But Colt Cabana was obviously involved in that trial. But I don't believe, to my knowledge, there's no bad blood there. But I don't know the full context of that, so I don't want to speculate.
Got it.
Yeah, so watching it happen, you're kind of seeing like, okay, you know what, this he's hot about. Like after a while, you're like, okay, he's really hot. Tony, I felt the worst for. Very bad situation he was put in. And you know, to me, it was a moment of, okay, so this guy has a second chance in wrestling, right? He could erase the negativity that existed for him leaving the way he did for his fan base. Not saying he shouldn't have left WWE or anything, right? There's also a stigma with attitude, whatever. Everybody has their own reason to do everything. But so far in AEW, it's been kumbaya for 3 years. And, you know, starting in January, things started to unravel a little bit here. Cody leaves first. MJF dispute. Now CM Punk and Hangman. And now with the Elite. The fact that this blew into a brawl in the back or a melee, quote unquote, however you want to say it, chairs were thrown, people are being bit, Ace Steel is biting people. This is insane to me. And I hope we are all wrong. This is Tony Khan showing he's this master creative genius that's been able to fool everybody with this reality injected in professional wrestling in AEW. I really hope, I wish that is the case here. Because if it's not, there's multiple problems. One, you have EVPs that are ready to get hot and argue. You have a world champion that's swinging at people, and he should be the locker room leader, right? That's the guy. That's your world champion. You have a owner that has lost control, for that night at least, of his staff. This looks insane to me. And by the way, a lot of these guys are millionaires. On top of that, right? They're all in key positions. It's not like 1995 and they're clawing for that top spot. These are established names in professional wrestling and respected names. So this is insane to me, the whole process.
You kind of hope that it's like a nightmare and you wake up and it's
I'm not saying listen, I'm not, there's not an ounce of anything in me that's denying that this is a legitimate issue that they have. I'm hoping that we are all wrong here, because nobody wants to be right in this situation, right? This is a it never looks good. Listen, they're trying to get a new contract on Warner. You know, how does this look to them?
Yeah, and listen, I would like to think I'm pretty perceptive as to if someone is working me or whatnot. And at no point in that press conference did I ever feel like we were being worked on this Punk stuff. On the tag team title stuff with Swerve and Keith Lee, that was certainly like an in-character kind of thing they were trying to do. But as far as this Punk stuff, certainly not. And the craziest thing that I think has ever happened in a press conference that I've been in, aside from a man who was literally on FaceTime with his family during a press conference after a Team USA soccer game that I was in, the security guard bursting through the door at full speed to go tent, which very much happened. And all of us looked at each other when it happened. But I don't think anyone put two and two together at that point that something in the locker room was going down. And when it started to seep in, it was clear that it probably wasn't supposed to be Chris Jericho coming in for the scrum, because there was this big random pause and they were trying to get Jericho via text. And I shot some texts off in that moment. And immediately I was told something's going down in the locker room. Something just went down.
What's hysterical is, what time was that?
It would have been after it would have been after Tony Storm spoke. So probably, I don't know, around 12:45 local time, maybe a little before that.
So around like 1:30 Eastern.
Yeah, around that.
I started getting messages from people at WWE asking me because everybody thought I was there. So there, I'm getting messages like, tell me what's going on, what's happening. And I didn't respond to anybody because it's 1:30 in the morning and I want to stay in bed. But it seems like, you know, everybody got wind of this around the same time, around like that 2 a.m. spot. Let me ask you this, John. When you were there, how was Tony's reaction to this? Because at a point, Jericho said something to Tony, like letting him know that something's happening.
Can you repeat the first part of your question? You cut out there on me for a second.
At what point did Tony, Tony's reaction to things, like at what point do you think he got wind of, you know, there's like a brawl happening?
I think he got wind that something was happening around when Jericho came up. And I think he may have said something to him at that juncture, just again, observing body language and their interactions and watching it back. It seems like that might have been what had happened. I was more surprised. There were a couple things I was surprised with. One, as Punk was going on this tangent here, I was very surprised that Tony did not step in and say something to cool him down and be a voice of reason to try to squash it where it was, because I've been in press conferences in the past where I've seen managers or coaches or even PR officials. I'm surprised a PR official didn't hop in and be like, hey, let's take a breather here. Because when someone is hot about something, and think of what, to give context to Punk too, think of what he had just been through. He went through an extremely physical match in front of a very emotional crowd, his hometown crowd. His emotions are running high in the moment. I understand that. I get that. I was just very surprised. And I think that was part of the optic problem, right? That CM Punk is calling Hangman Page, this top star at AEW, all these names, and Tony Khan is there nodding. And I don't think that Tony was doing that maliciously by any stretch of the imagination. I think it was just circumstantial. And when you're in the moment, it's always harder looking back on it to be like, oh, you should have done this, you should have done that. I'm not here to say what Tony Khan should have done or shouldn't have done. I just know that there's no question in my mind that there is an optic issue there when the head of the company is sitting there right next to the man going on a tangent like this. I don't think Tony Khan would ever endorse those words. I don't think Tony Khan would endorse the actions of what happened afterwards. But now he has to wrestle with that. These were the optics. What do you do now?
So I want to go back to something that you were talking about, which was the whole security guard situation and sort of what Andrew's talking about, because I always assume, now I know that Tony is also the person he trusts to do all the PR, right? He trusts that, he's going to get the message out that he needs to get to promote that show, which is why I assume he's the one that does all the media. In this scenario, someone was asking me, they said, when has an owner ever been in the interviews and in the scrums? And then it's like, Dana White. Like, Dana White is always there. And so for that perspective, I thought Tony, for Tony to be there, I thought he was there just in case the talent sent the wrong message out or someone said something that he could correct to make sure that the media has the right information for their stories. But like you said, Punk is there and Tony doesn't stop him once and he is nodding. And I took that as he's trying to absorb the information and going like, did he really say that? But he doesn't want to react in like a way to show Punk up. But at the same time, he's kind of agreeing with him in an odd way. And I don't think that's what he meant to do either. But so going back to that moment, like, why doesn't this guy have his phone? maybe he did and I didn't see it, but I didn't see him like, look, you know, and why isn't there, I guess, maybe he needs an assistant to come in and, you know, go like, hey, you know, what do you think? Should we do something here? I don't know. There's a lot of that is just Monday morning quarterbacking. But I was wondering your thoughts on being that you've seen, you've been in post-show press conferences before, and you've probably seen the Dana White thing. Like, what do you think about the whole way that Tony sets these things up? Because essentially, he sets it up so that this shouldn't happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, Tony has been at every single post-presser that I've been at, with the exception, I believe, of the first Fighter Fest back in 2019. I don't think he was at that one. But aside from that, he's been at every single one to my knowledge. And yeah, you would think that it's setting up for that. I want to make this clear. I do not envy Tony Khan in this situation.
No way.
It's an unwinnable situation. And I do have empathy for him because I do think Tony Khan is a nice guy. And he was put in a really difficult position as this stuff was happening. But there is an optic issue, right? And traditionally, again, speaking from real sports world, things that I've seen where press conferences have gone awry, PR people step in and will shut something down.
Always.
And that did not happen here. For whoever's...
No, and right before we went on the air, I was talking to Garrett, you know, we were just talking about this. And I said, you know, I don't know why at any point did, you know... He sees that CM Punk is angry, right? He sees that this is going on. He's pissed off. He's, you know, burying people left and right. At one point, you know, all he had to do with a smile, say, you know what, guys, we're going to take 10 minutes. I want to cool off. I don't want this to get, you know, I don't want people to say, you know, something they're going to regret. We're going to take 10 minutes, clear the freaking room, and start over. You would have avoided all of this. I'm not blaming Tony, by the way. You know, when you're in that moment, it's very difficult. It's easier for me to say that now. But, 100%. You know, I know people that have done business with Tony, with his companies. And I've never thought this guy's not a pushover. I know that some people like to pretend he is and the wrestlers control everything. He's not a pushover. He's a very smart guy. He understands business. He understands optics, which is very important. He understands how important public your PR is. Your public images, he's in a contract year going in. At one point, you stop this and you say, guys, shut the F up. What are you guys doing? How would Vince have handled it? I mean, that's the reality here. How would have Hunter handled it? How would have Steph handled it? I don't think this would have gone on if this was WWE. The other thing, which is interesting to me, right? And Punk's major issue starts with reality getting blurred into pro wrestling, which is something that he's always done. And it's always something that really, you know, it works. We saw on Monday last week, Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle in this, you know, this video promo where Seth Rollins essentially said the truth that he can't even see his kids because of his divorce. And he only has, you know, limited time. And this is all factual. This is stuff that's real. Like, he really doesn't get to see the kid. There's a lot of stuff in that divorce that's not looking great when you read it, you know, when you read the papers. So, you know, that's a sense. I mean, nobody went to blows over that. So as a pro wrestler, when you're cutting the promos, I don't think Hangman purposely said what he said to hurt CM Punk. I think they're getting in the sense of reality. They want this program to work well. And for whatever reason, it really upset him. But, you know, I think Dave brought it up, or Brian brought it up on Observer Radio. The things that were said about Eddie Kingston the last couple of weeks, or the things that Eddie Kingston said about CM Punk. Why was that not a problem? It is it is selective issues, I guess. You're picking and choosing which one is your problem. I don't know.
A couple things on what you just said, Andrew. One, Eddie Kingston and Sammy, when their thing happened, we sort of learned what the decorum is when you do promos, right? You're sort of clearing it with the other guy, especially if you're going to go a little bit inside or a little negative on them, right? Like, that's what they said. That's where the beef happened. Eddie didn't believe that that he was made aware that this is where the thing was going, and that's why he got upset, at least as far as all of the reports that I've read. So yeah, that's one. So that's the part that we don't know about, is if Hangman and Punk had sort of had this conversation about where they were going. Based on Punk's reaction, it would seem like no, but we don't know. And obviously, the receipt, Hangman didn't know that that was coming. Secondly,
yeah,
Dave and I talked to Tony on Saturday night. And, you know, Dave brought up the idea of a lot of these, you know, little inside things, and he compared it to Brett and Sean. And from Tony's answer, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something like, oh, you know, fans find it intriguing, or it kind of works, or, you know, it brings more awareness, or whatever it was. I wish I would have followed up that question or that answer by saying, okay, but what happens if it goes too far, which is what happened on Sunday night, which is so weird to me because we had just talked to him about it. But not, you know, Dave is the most, you know, Dave's little, his spidey senses go off, you know, quicker than anybody's. And he didn't really have a sense that this was coming, at least as far as the discussions that I had with him. So, like, those two things were, it's just so interesting that, you know, we're building this thing and then it kind of goes overboard. And I wonder, and maybe John has some insight in this, like, how far is too far with some of this stuff? Because it's obviously emotion, and no one's, you know, these promos aren't coming from scriptwriters. Like, this is real emotion, and it works on TV. Yeah. But we never hear about these guys getting frustrated really until now. I don't know if, John, if you have any thoughts on that.
There is one thing I do want to say, and this was something that I very consciously did in that press conference. As I said, context and trying to keep things in perspective is very important, even in the heat of the moment. And on paper, you see CM Punk throws all these accusations at the EVPs and Hangman Page, right? Those guys were not in the room to defend themselves from any of those accusations. Tony was not given an opportunity, or if he had an opportunity, he would have been cutting Punk off in doing so, to give his perspective or that side of the equation. That was a very conscious decision of mine to ask Tony at the end of the press conference, in fairness to him and in fairness to the EVPs, because the last question that I asked was, have their roles changed in any capacity? Where do they sit in terms of your structure? And essentially to give an opportunity to stick up for them, or to maybe not stick up for them, but to give Tony an opportunity to do so prompted. And I thought his response was really interesting, where he talked about how they were valuable contributors behind the scenes, in front of the camera still. But my perspective, again, it was not as forceful and emphatic as I was almost expecting it to be. So as far as the dynamic of what you asked for, I'm not really sure as to how those things are fleshed out backstage. I was a little surprised that they simmered to this point. I'd imagine CM Punk not being there for a few months probably played into that a little bit. But I just thought it was important that everyone had a chance to have a say or to be represented in this press conference. And that is specifically why I know I personally asked about the EVPs and the Young Bucks and the Hangman Page, et cetera.
Hey, Andrew. So
yes,
obviously today is probably somewhat of a decision day for what happens as far as, you know, if people are going to get punished. But we have a show tomorrow for Dynamite, which is the, you know, the show right after this giant pay-per-view where MJF comes out at the end and he's the big surprise and there's the buzz in that arena. And we haven't even talked about the show yet, which I do want to get your both of your thoughts in a second here. But between now and tomorrow, it seems like there's got to be some decisions made about some of these guys, not only for company reasons, but also because where are we going with this show and with the storylines and everything? Like, what do you think, you know, do you sense that we're going to have to throw away a bunch of stuff and start all over? Like, how do you think this thing sort of, it's all speculation, but we're just, you know, sort of having opinions on it. But where do you think we go from today?
Listen, I you know a little bit about my day gig.
Yes.
I sometimes, occasionally, I have to step in and deal with a lot of independent contractors. I don't envy Tony at all at this moment. I it's a very difficult position to be in, but he has to show the world, his viewership, his following, Warner executives. By the way, I've had conversations this morning with people over there, at Warner. Not on the executive, but at Discovery Warner Brothers. And, you know, some of them think, most of them that messaged me were asking if this is real. You know, and that is the blessing wrestling has a little bit, you know, when something like this happens that they think like, right. Okay, maybe it's not real and you don't put as much attention. But they have to make a decision, too. They're going to have to, you know, have a conversation. This is on their property. They don't want instability happening. The reason why they're getting paid the money they're getting paid and they're allowed to be on a national television channel is because they are looked at as a premier product. This is amateur hour when you have people fighting and yelling and screaming like that. So also last week we had an F-bomb live on the air, you know, accident or not, I don't know. But if I'm Tony, I have to decide something, right? You have to either suspend or address this or fire somebody. You know, should CM Punk be fired? Will he be fired? I don't know what the answer is because he is your money draw. We saw Conor McGregor throw a chair or whatever it was, a dolly at a bus and injured people, legitimately injured people and cost them pay-per-view payoffs. So, you know, and he wasn't fired. So I don't know. This is a wonky business. And by the way, these are 40-year-old men. These are 35-year-old, 40-year-old men fighting like this. Why?
And Andrew, I want to make this clear too, just to the audience, because I do, and I've gotten a million tweets about it. I'm sure you have too. It's natural with wrestling to think, it's just a work, to think that it's a wrestling company. Of course, they can do this. Well, first off, if this is a work, why are you doing this on a platform that nobody is really seeing? If this is a work, you would want it playing out on your television show.
Right.
There's no upside to it playing out in a media scrum. That's the first thing to say. Number two, I cannot state enough how unequivocally real this is. Okay, it is very much real. The security guard dashed through that press conference. It absolutely happened. Now, with that said, should cooler heads prevail? Of course this can turn into a work. That's a lot that has happened in wrestling many a time.
It should. Yeah.
And if, as you've said before, Andrew, like, you're going to want to make money off this in some capacity if you can. But I just need to state unequivocally clear enough, as things stand right now, there's nothing fake about this. This is a very real thing that happened.
You are 100%. And the going back to what Andrew said about, you know, these are grown men, but this is an environment, right? This is a competitive environment. Now, you would think with guaranteed contracts now, you know, being the champion is very, very meaningful, but it's not like you are the John Cena of the group and Vince cares about you and you're going to make all the money more than everybody else. Like, that's not how generally we've seen it work. But Tony Khan has also said in the past that he was going to do things a little bit different, a little bit more talent friendly. What does that mean? Because in the previous iteration of pro wrestling that we know, that we all grew up in, this thing would not be resolved in anybody getting fired. it may have not even been resolved in anybody getting suspended. It would be, well, we're going to work out these issues on television and everyone's going to make money. With Punk being the top guy and the top draw, he is now the champion again. I'm in the sort of like, I'll believe it when I see it mode when it comes to somebody having action taken upon them.
Yeah.
But also, I will acknowledge that Tony did say things were different. So that's part of this that we can't just go into what has happened historically and say, well, this is what happened, so this is what's going to happen. I think this thing is different because of who is running this company. And also, like John said, this was on like a YouTube stream, and I don't know how many people were watching at once. I imagine there was probably more than normal once word got out, but like, it's like so many, you know, we're living sort of in the Truman Show era, right? Everything is on TV. Everybody has a phone. You know, everyone can see what's going on. And that's why I wanted John on, because he was literally there, feet on the floor, watching everything, you know, come to be. And so I guess the long beginning to this question for John is, do you sense that Tony is going to be held to a higher responsibility because of what he's talked about prior in building this company?
From fans. Sure. I think the first thing that needs to be said is, keep in mind, Eddie Kingston just got suspended for something that was significantly lower on the scale than what happened, right? So if that is going to be our baseline for what constitutes punishment, well, this is on a whole nother level of that. And again, this is a very real thing that happened. We don't know the exact details of what happened. There's obviously a lot of people saying, oh, someone threw a chair, someone did this, someone was biting, blah, blah, blah. But certainly there were enough witnesses, pardon me, to what happened that can iron this out and help delegate in that regard. I think
so. Let me just say this before I'm getting people are messaging me throughout this entire show, which I generally appreciate. We got 1600 people watching this live on YouTube and a whole bunch more on Twitch.
We're live, pal.
We may have news that breaks before we're done today with the show.
Yeah, I'm keeping an eye on that as well.
I'm seeing too. Yeah,
I've been firing off some texts while we've been on air too. But
here's a question, right? Here's a question. Let's legitimately do this, right? These things have happened in the past. I saw a lot of people talking about Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels getting into a fight in the 90s, but a lot of people are forgetting just a couple years ago, Chris Jericho and Brock Lesnar got into a mix-up. Brock Lesnar took his title and he threw it at Vince McMahon in Gorilla. You know, it happens because, at the end of the day, you know, this is a crazy business with crazy people that want to, fall on their heads all day long. I mean, I generally, it is a very risky job with, people that are willing to take that risk. They're not us. They're not civilians, right? It's a very different thought process. It is. And talking to wrestlers, you know, they're wired differently negative. Nobody take that as a negative whatsoever. But, you know, a guy like CM Punk, indie darling in the early 2000s, was told he'll never make it to the main, you know, to the main stage. He ends up doing it. He ends up becoming a world champion in WWE, walks out, goes to another company 7 years later and becomes a world champion within a year. It is a mind baffling thing when you have this happen publicly, but it does happen occasionally.
Yeah, it does.
And nobody gets fired in WWE.
I just can't reiterate enough, though. I think perception is reality for a lot of people, and this is Tony Khan's make or break moment. Again, I preface this by saying I really do like Tony Khan a lot, and I've had a lot of great conversations with him. I've asked him very critical questions in the past, and he's been forceful in response, but respectful at the same time, and I can respect that. I can respect that. I've never felt disrespected once, and I think AEW succeeding is unfathomably good for the pro wrestling industry all the way around. So Tony Khan has this opportunity now to take a stand and to show to the entire industry what their company's morals are. He has a chance to show to the locker room who he's in support of. He has a chance to show to everyone that this isn't the outlaw mud show that so many people who like to criticize AEW throw those insults at them, and to show that there is a way of the land here. Things have undoubtedly gone off the rails in the past couple of months. No one is going to deny that. Chris Jericho said as much, that after the talent meeting, that things still got a little out of hand. But there is a chance now to change that perception in an emphatic and forceful way with whatever route of action they choose to take. I'm not going to sit here and say what is the right route of action, but I think that there will be a clear precedent set within the next 24 to 48 hours as to where this company stands on discipline and what their direction moving forward is.
Yeah, these are growing pains, but unfortunately, it's all public right now for them.
Yes,
that's the big problem here. Listen,
yeah, it is more public.
Vince was right. Maybe Vince was right. Scripted promos, you know? It could all have been avoided. I'm joking here, but it could all have been avoided with a scripted promo. Garrett, let me ask you this, because you were at the pay-per-view. You were there.
Yes.
You were around people, and so was John. But at the end, like, if you were to guess what the end result here is, what would you say? Nobody report this, by the way. This is just me asking Garrett his own personal thought, because I'm curious what everybody, and John, too. I'm curious what you think the outcome will be here, because we're probably going to get an answer within the next couple minutes. So I'm curious. Whatever.
So I'm going to take this in a slightly different direction than people probably think I'm going to answer. I think Tony needs to beef up his management team. He needs to bring in people who he trusts, who may not only just be wrestlers, right, or part of the wrestling business. I imagine that he will have his dad. I imagine he's asking his dad, you know, thoughts on what to do. Obviously, a very successful businessman. But here's an interesting thought, right? And this comes to me because on the flight home from Chicago, I was just digging through my Kindle and I was like, oh, I haven't finished Jim Ross's second book, the Black Hat book. Mm. And I'm reading it and I'm going like, wow, there's lots of comparisons in Jim's book to what's going on today. One of them about the NWO. And so I thought, you know, who's got more experience in dealing with talent and stuff like this than Jim Ross? And I know people are going to groan just because I said that. Jim Ross does not have to be the talent evaluator. He does not have to tell you who to push. But I think Tony should lean on JR for some advice in how to get the cupboard in order here, because Jim has done it for so long with way bigger stars. And that's not a shot at the AEW talent. It's just when Jim was when Jim was doing it, the wrestling was just bigger to the public.
He dealt with all the maniacs.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, he's dealt with Austin and Rock and all of that stuff at that time. So I don't know if he's going to ask Jim, but my prediction is that Tony beefs up his management team. He beefs up the people who he can trust who may not only be wrestlers, so that he creates a little bit more of a hierarchy. Because you mentioned Vince McMahon. This doesn't happen in public on a Vince McMahon television show because there's an expectation about what happens if it does. And I think he needs to create that expectation with his talent.
Hey, we got some news here real quick, guys. Yeah, I'm going to be on pause here for a second here, guys.
Okay, you go on pause because I have some news too. It looks like Malakai Black has been removed from the AEW roster on their website.
Now, do we know more about that as far as why is he taking time off? Is like,
no,
like,
he's very, like, he was very unhappy. That's the initial thing that I was told.
I heard that as well, but it was just so weird that, you know, I guess you wouldn't really have a swan song for a guy who, if he is going to leave, but I was sort of under the impression that maybe he's just kind of putting things on pause, but I don't know exactly.
I don't know. I know that he was, dissatisfied for a while, but you know, I think he's always been put in a decent position. He's been booked very strong from the beginning of getting there. I think he's a very important act for them. I don't know if this has to do with positioning or money, but to me, I felt that he was positioned in a way better way than he was in WWE all those years on the main roster.
I believe so too. You know, he had one person backing him who was Paul Heyman, right? Or Triple H, I'm sure, as well. But yeah. Paul Heyman really liked him on the main roster. And then Paul Heyman had his, you know, his responsibilities taken away. So that went with Aleister Black, and then he went to AEW. I think the hard part is the House of Black as a team, as a unit, is a little hard to book, you know, when it comes to the Hocus Pocus stuff. You know, you either have to go all the way with them, and if you don't, you don't really have a mid-card Hocus Pocus group, right? Like, that's why, you know,
the Malachi Undertaker... Black's still in there. So sorry. Malachi Black is still on there. Yeah.
Okay, good. Hey guys, good. But no, no, we're good. So, you know, we got about 20 minutes left here. I do want to get your thoughts on the actual show, because there was lots of news coming out of that show as well. With MJF coming back, they used the little audio clip of Tony and him negotiating and Tony giving him sort of the last thing, you know. I very much thought, oh, this is Brett and Vince from 1997. You know, Brett has the secret tape on Vince. I don't know if that was the influence. That was just what I thought. But, John, you were there. You were in second row, I think. I saw you. You were sitting right in front of me. What did you think of the show overall? Like, this is even before we knew all the chaos was going to happen. Did you like the show in comparison to some of the other shows that they've done?
So I have felt for a long time a lot of these AEW pay-per-views have dragged and dragged, as great as they are. And I can, one thing I know I'm always going to get with AEW, I know I'm always going to get good wrestling. I'm never concerned about that. So I have felt a lot of these shows drag, but truthfully, and maybe it was just the adrenaline from a bunch of bangs that I was drinking, I'm not sure, but I felt like this show actually moved along pretty well for one of the longer shows, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. I really liked the story that Punk and Mox told in the main event. I liked the finish a lot. I loved the show-long story that they told with Max. I wasn't quite sure about it initially when it happened, but then I put the pieces of Sympathy with the Devil together and all that. I'm like, oh, okay, this is a really good story they're going to tell throughout the show, and I got it. So it's a shame to me that we're not sitting here talking about what a great angle this was, because it really was a very successful angle. And I'm sure you can attest too, Garrett, that pop that MJF got was monstrous. It was gigantic. So it is a shame. And I thought the FTR moment with Dax's daughter was just such a great wrestling moment.
Yeah.
It was a good show. It really was. I don't think it compared to last year's All Out. I thought last year's All Out was like a transformative wrestling show in terms of quality. But I thought it was a good show, and it's just a shame that the big time angle is being overlooked here.
So from the perspective of wrestling matches, I was trying to think of AEW title matches are the main event of their shows. Where would you rank Moxley and Punk in that ranking of AEW title matches? I was trying to think. I thought maybe Omega Hangman, I thought, was better, but this has got to be up there because I really, really love that match.
I thought the finish was awesome of the Moxley Punk match, and telling a story that they went to war, so much so that they collapsed. I thought that was great. Yeah. Very New Japan style storytelling that I really, really enjoyed. I think I'm probably putting Hangman and Omega a small step ahead of that. I really liked, and people kind of forget about this match, but I really liked the Moxley MJF match. Mm-hmm. That was for the title. I thought that was a really good title match. Very few times have AEW put on a pay-per-view and the championship match didn't live up to the hype. It's only happened one or two times. So I'd say it's probably in that pantheon of the top three AEW title matches on pay-per-view, I'd say.
The one that opened up John Moxley's book is probably the one that everyone's thinking of. The beginning of his book with the explosion that never happened.
I was at Andrew. That show too.
The explosion that never happened.
That was awful.
Yeah. Andrew, so
the scrum was better.
The scrum was 20 times more explosive than the exploding barbed wire.
By the way, the scrum right now on AEW's page has about 560,000 views. It did better than Rampage did in the numbers. And also Denise's feed has about 500,000 views too. So it says a lot.
Andrew, you were on your couch. You may have had an adult beverage.
I was in bed, dude. I was watching it.
You were in bed watching the show?
Oh, dude, I was in bed. I was
Pinot Grigio?
You know? I was having a really nice Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, there we go.
And I may
Are
have
you
taken
a Pinot Grigio
I may have
guy?
I am. I love my white wines.
You know me too. I'm so we are.
You know what?
From the
surprise,
same
surprise,
same, surprise, surprise. I love Pinot Gris. I love a nice Sauvignon Blanc. I go to the vineyards. You know what, John? You and I, we should go to the vineyards together. Just us.
Can we do it?
No
before
girlfriends,
Grand Slam?
No wives. Just us.
Can we do it before Grand Slam and then take a really cute picture together?
that'll be the promo picture. What was your question, Garrett? I'm so sorry. Yeah,
what'd you think of the show, Andrew?
I took an edible and had a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc to myself.
With your satin pajamas watching in bed.
Who's wearing PJs? Who's wearing PJs? I'm watching wrestling. No, dude, I had a great time watching. You know, like, the pay-per-views are always good. I have to tell you, the pre-show, that Kingston match really was unbelievable. Loved it, right? I think unanimous people very much liked it. The show was great. I enjoyed top to bottom. I thought it was a very solid show. I thought the main event, I was in and out for that main event, though. Like, I fell asleep a couple times because I was so tired. You know, the bottle of Pinot Gris, Sauvignon Blanc didn't help. But, I rewound it and I finished watching it. I thought that main event was fantastic. They worked really hard. It was a hard-hitting match. You know, Punk looked really good. I think this was one of the best that he's looked. No, I mean, do you guys agree with that? I mean, in AEW, in this run,
I thought Punk looked good, but
cardio wise, he was keeping up.
Yeah. But I thought Moxley was awesome in that match. Like, just the aggression made the whole match for me. Like, obviously, the thing that I think everyone is sort of wondering is how does Punk wrestle a better match with this bad foot? And I don't think they really told that story very well, but in the match, and I didn't hear the commentary, obviously being there live, but I thought Moxie's aggression and the way Punk was selling kind of told it for me well enough to where I was bought in. The other thing is, John can attest to, that crowd was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Originally it was, you know, Moxie did get some cheers, and I think he was probably a little surprised to get some cheers. But, you know, just that Chicago Punk crowd, like, I get why they keep going back to Chicago, because, you know, you are guaranteed to get a crowd that reacts to really good stuff. And they did, and they made that match so much better than, another crowd would have. But I really think Mox's aggression helped tell that story for me. Punk did a really good job as well. But that was the finish that we all knew we were getting, and I thought they pulled it off perfectly, like John said earlier.
I think the saddest part to all of this is that nobody's talking about this freaking pay-per-view, including us, right? Barely. Nobody's talking about it. You know, same thing happened the previous time with MJF. Nobody was talking about the pay-per-view. Everybody was talking about MJF. And then CM Punk broke his foot. Now this, nobody's talking about the pay-per-view. Someone in the chat goes, because the pay-per-view sucked. The pay-per-view did not suck. I don't know what show he watched. I don't know show. I mean, we watched very different shows. I've watched many shows that suck.
Come on, Carlos.
I mean, it was a good show. You can't say it sucked. And by the way, Clash was a good show too, which nobody is talking about. You know, WWE, for a week, they were people at WWE. They were telling me how, you know, they want to be the show of the weekend. There was no show this weekend. The Scrum was the show of the weekend. here's another great match. Acclaimed. Acclaimed did something unbelievable.
Dude, let me tell you, that match in person was freaking fantastic. Aside from just the crowd reaction, those two teams gave a freaking master's course on how to climax a tag team match
from a
storytelling perspective. It was so fantastically put together. Whoever helped put that match together deserves all the flowers in the world. I love that match, and all four guys read the crowd perfectly. I honestly think they could have done without the whole little endorsement with Billy Gunn there at the end, because the crowd wasn't really feeling that. They wanted to firmly be behind the Acclaimed winning the championship there. But there was one thing I just did want to add real quick here on the back of your point about Punk. It's also sad for me because I have loved this CM Punk run from an in-ring standpoint. There are very few matches I haven't enjoyed from this. I think he has enhanced just about every guy he's been in the ring with. All of his feuds have been must-see TV. The MJF feud was arguably the feud of the year.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed the work he's been doing. And if we have seen CM Punk wrestle his last match, I don't know if we have. But if we have, it's a somber feeling knowing that it potentially ended on circumstances like this again.
Wild.
Absolutely. To go back to the Acclaim thing. Okay. Being there live like John, I think John will agree with me in that old wrestling heads may go, oh, they missed their peak. Because when I was watching it, I was like, wow, I wonder if they're going to miss their peak. And I was like, nope, they didn't, because the crowd was right back. And it happened like two or three times. So if people are trying to tell you as a wrestling fan, you know, that match was really good, but they missed their peak and it went too long, I will say, if we are basing it on crowd reaction, they did not go too long, because the crowd was just as hot for the finish as they were for that first moment, that first near fall where they thought it might have been the end. So, you know, let the people who the old school wrestling fans who may have thought it was too long, we were there. So let the record show that that was not the case. And I think John probably agrees with me.
Yeah, Garrett, that cradle, I forget when it was near the end of the match, that cradle, I think it was by Bowens, was one of the greatest near falls I've ever seen live.
Oh,
it
so was good. So good.
Unbelievable.
Amazing.
Yeah, and look, commentary did a great job, by the way. You guys didn't hear it, but commentary was really on the money with this match. A lot of people said maybe they should have called an audible. And
that's just what I was going to bring up.
Picture.
Go for it.
I think they, you know what, in at the moment, maybe could have, should have, would have, I don't know. But they have a hot program with two really young guys to get that tag title in a big show. I mean, you could do it at Arthur Ashe and you know, the fake roof will blow off that building. The wind will also gust that roof because it's not a very stable roof. But I think they could do something with these guys again, and there's money in it for sure.
So I did want to ask both of you about this, whether or not you thought they should have made the audible, because as I'm watching this finish, I also thought, oh, people are going to say that they should have made the audible. And if I'm Tony Khan, and I don't want to be Tony Khan right now, but it, you know, if I'm thinking like with that mentality, his whole plan was to get these guys hot, right? And so it's like, yeah, it was perfect. It was everything that you wanted it to be. And now these guys are hot, and then you can do what you were going to do with them in the big way that you thought, if they are going to win the titles, which I would imagine so, because they are, you know, they are such a hot act. But I did not want them to audible if he's got a long story with these guys to finally win the belt, because I imagine it's going to be really good. And if they do it at Arthur Ashe, that crowd's going to be nuts for it. Just as much as the Chicago one was.
Yeah,
I'll be there. I'll be at Arthur Ashe, so I'm looking forward to that.
And I'll be there too, just to take that picture with you, buddy, that we've been so craving for so long. But no, but for real though, Tony said it in the post presser that he's looking at that match for Grand Slam, and I think this is just using context clues here. I could totally be wrong, but using context clues based on the press conference, I think the intention was to run this match, see the reaction it got, and if it got the reaction that they were hoping it would, they would run it at Grand Slam again and maybe do a title change there. That's why I don't think there was an audible call here, because you can make an argument that maybe there should have been. I think the degree that the Acclaimed got over to was far greater than anyone really expected, even though everyone knows they're popular. Everybody loves the Acclaimed, right? But I think it surpassed the expectations, and that's why you had so many people calling for an audible. But here's also the reality. You do it in front of 20,000 people at Arthur Ashe Stadium, that's going to be a pretty damn big moment.
Yeah, and the other thing about it is maybe you put it closer into the main event. Right. Rather than in the middle of the show, being in the middle of the show, it almost got over too much, because I think it hurt the next match, which was the women's four way. And, you know, there was a little bit of lull after those until the main event. So you could position it differently higher in the card and give that anticipation. Because, you know, I don't think it's going to be the main event. But let's say they said it was the main event. That says to the fans, oh, something's going to happen here. So I think they can do that as well. All right, we got 5 minutes. Now, Andrew, we're going to attempt to do a test here, correct?
We are.
5 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so the Twitch feed will switch over to, does it automatically go to Brian and Lance?
Well, we're going to turn off the Twitch feed. So Brian and Lance have to do, I think, a members-only show, right?
Okay.
FRW show. So what we're going to do, if you're on Twitch, go to our YouTube, because we're going to go a little longer today. We're gonna take, like, I don't know, 10 minutes or whatever we could do.
Yeah.
So you could watch it on YouTube. Head on over to YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, stay here. Don't go anywhere. If you're on Twitch, go over to the YouTube channel and you could join us there.
All right. John, I wanted to give you the opportunity to get your plugs in. Now, I mentioned the Matt Hardy podcast that you do. I know Wives of Wrestling is another one, but you were doing stuff this weekend in Chicago, or Schaumburg, essentially. But you were a very busy dude this weekend as well. But I wanted to give you opportunity to get some stuff and get some plugs in.
Yeah, thank you. The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy drops every single Friday. I'm extremely, no pun intended, proud of that show. I think Matt Hardy is one of the greatest storytellers in wrestling and one of the greatest minds in wrestling. I'm biased, obviously, as his co-host, but if anyone is learning or just wanting to learn about pro wrestling, the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy is going to be the place to do that. So go check that out every single Friday. He has great perspective. The Wives of Wrestling right now, we're on a little bit of hiatus as we're trying to kind of pivot and come up with a different plan of action for that show, but the archives are still very much available. You can check me out on adfreeshows.com. I got like a million different projects and shows that I'm doing over there. And it's been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you guys having me on here.
Now, do you have any quick story from the weekend that that is kind of a cool story to end with? My cool story actually is not a real story, but I wanted to take a picture with the It's Still Real to Me, Damn It guy. I forget his name, but he was walking around. And I was like, oh, I want to get a picture with him just to, you know, send to my friends. And we had to go. I think we had to go to the Tony Khan interview, so we couldn't stop. And then I was looking for him for the rest of the week. And I just wanted to have that picture because he was out there. He was hanging out and, you know, he was talking to people. But John, any quick thing that you could think of that was cool for you this weekend?
I got to be on the Wrestling Showcase, and we did. To my knowledge, for the first time ever, I don't think it's ever been on a pro wrestling broadcast. I was the sideline reporter. It's an idea that I've pitched it to a million different wrestling organizations, and nobody has taken me up on it. And we tried it, and there were a couple technical snafus. That's going to happen when you try something for the first time. But there's never been a sideline reporter on a wrestling broadcast like what you'd see on an NFL game or an NBA game. And I thought we had a really unique approach to it that helped further the storylines for the show and give insight to the matches that I don't think you're typically used to on a pro wrestling TV broadcast. So that's something I was very grateful for, as well as Top Guy Weekend. And It's Still Real to Me, Damn It guy is a top guy on Ad Free Shows, so I got to hang out with him as well.
That's cool. Now, how can people watch what you did
On Fight TV, the Wrestling Showcase? If you go look it up, Matt Cardona ended up winning the whole thing, spoiler alert, but it was a lot of fun and we told a great story. And of course, Garrett, seeing you topped my weekend, no doubt about that.
That was
the Hyatt, right, where we were staying, where would have been staying. Oh, very cool. They didn't have that last year, so that's cool. I would have enjoyed that, to go down to my room to watch wrestling.
You know, later in the evening, you would see a lot of the wrestlers spill out into the bar area. And so if you were someone who likes seeing all these big, giant, buff dudes walk around the bar, that was what was going on in the evenings as well. So, hey, John, we're going to let you go. So, you know, we only asked you to be on for an hour. Andrew and I are going to do the extra 10 to kind of talk about some WWE stuff. But You're a gem, my friend. Really appreciated running into you and meeting you finally in person. And I can't wait to hear the play-by-play from Andrew of when you guys finally meet for Grand Slam.
We're gonna get like a two-seater unicycle. We're just gonna do like a whole thing together. We're gonna go around in Flushing. I'll take him to my favorite dumpling place. We'll slurp the noodle together. It'll be a whole thing.
It's basically gonna be the Muppets Take Manhattan, but in professional wrestling. And I'm thinking we're going to be hearing some news pretty shortly, guys. So I'm going to go get on this. And thank you guys so much for having me.
Thanks, John.
Dude, I'll see you in a couple of weeks, John.
Sounds good.
All right. So are we off Twitch?
We are off Twitch and we're on YouTube. So we get like an extra we're live pal bonus.
Okay. So I'm not going to get a DM from Lance is what you're saying.
You should not. No, because I don't think, unless he doesn't want, you know, us to compete with him. Maybe he's getting a little nervous.
Okay.
You know, we got some high ratings right now. No, Twitch is off and Brian is doing his own thing. We're on a different key anyway.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, because the worst thing for me is to get this DM from Lance and saying, hurry up, main event is waiting. But all right. So it was actually a good idea because I did want to talk to you about this Clash of the Clash at the Castle.
We may have a Dave tweet. Dave Meltzer tweet right now. Nothing. By the way, guys, let's you know, here's the thing, right? There's a lot of speculation, right? The thing is, Dave is saying that somebody may have to vacate their belt. He said certainly a chance, but it's not official.
Yeah.
Not the same
thing. Covering himself.
So anything is possible. Anything is possible here.
Like you said, we're probably going to figure out what's going on really, really soon. And, you know, my hope is that they can figure out, you know, how to get along. Like John said in the beginning, man, like that's the best for everybody. But, you know, these cuts are raw and deep and, you know, emotion is spilling out. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, there's frustration left and right. And, you know, this is where Tony Khan can really shine, right? If he is a leader of his company, of this locker room, if Chris Jericho is that role of like the locker room guy, the locker room leader, maybe you can piece these things together. But
Jericho's a hothead too, so that's a little bit of the problem too.
Jericho's is he the oldest guy in the locker room as far as like the workers are concerned?
As far as the workers, is Billy's older? No, isn't Billy older?
You're right. Billy Gunn is probably older than Jericho.
But you know, like here's the reality though. Like no knock at Tony. Like I don't like you hear all the jokes. You could joke all you want, but at the end of the day, like if you know how he does business, you're not gonna knock this guy. Oh, Sting's the oldest guy in the locker room. Sting.
There you go.
So sorry.
There you go.
We forgot about the Stanger.
How do we forget about Sting? Of all people to forget about.
Well, he's a mystic, you know. He floats around. He's ageless. Nobody knows how old Sting is. That's what I'm going to do. When I hit 63, I'm just going to walk around with face paint on. Nobody'll know I'm old.
That's a good idea.
As long as I keep my hair. But
it's a good idea.
Jericho's 51, Billy's 58, and Sting is 63.
So Billy is 58?
Yeah, dude.
With those muscles,
huh?
Oh my God.
Stud. He's a stud.
Jesus.
John Alba's also a stud. So like knowing Tony as a business, not me personally, but knowing people that know Tony as a business guy, like outside of wrestling, he's not this incompetent guy. Like he's not this crazy guy that loves wrestling and decided to dump billions of his money into wrestling. That is not the case. This is a legitimate, successful franchise owner, multiple business ventures. He's not this guy that relies on his dad, no matter how many times you want to say this about him. People that do business with him regularly speak so highly of him. He now has to really show, like, guys, enough of this shit, right? Enough. It's over. He now needs to put his foot down and become, you know, the manager of this company. I also think they need to create the structure, like you said, where you don't go to Tony. Tony's out, you know, Tony's sitting on his chair and other people are able to diffuse things. Because if Tony has to run in and stop fights like this, not that he did, but if he has to do it, that is not a positive thing in your company structure.
No, not at all.
It is bonkers.
Okay, last 5 minutes here. Let's quickly.
Yes.
I wanted to get your thoughts on the main event of Clash at the Castle. I keep calling it Clash of the Castle. It's like I'm putting Clash of the Champions and Clash at the Castle together. I've screwed this up so many times. But what'd you think about Roman coming out on top and Drew losing in front of that, not necessarily hometown crowd, but home, you know, that they very much treated him like the hometown guy?
It's not what I wanted to see, but I understand why they did it. You know, they're building a story for Roman being this undefeated guy. And, you know, unfortunately for Drew, he happened to be in the UK in front of 70,000 people, 62,000 people, which, by the way, they called it by the actual attendance. Mm-hmm. They didn't inflate the number. This is the first pay-per-view I could think of in ever that they didn't inflate the number. I could have sworn they were going to announce 78,000 people in that building, but I think it would have been such a great moment for you know, Drew to win that title there, but that's obviously not the story here. They have another plan and they're sticking to it.
So I agree with you just about 100%, and I'm glad that you said that, because my initial reaction, and I think I said this on last week's show, is I kind of wanted both things to happen. I wanted Roman to stay the champion, and I wanted Drew to somehow come out winning this match for that hometown crowd. But if you have a plan, if you have a long-term plan, I think they should stick to whatever that long-term plan is. And the book, you know, Vince McMahon kind of booked them into a corner here. And Triple H could have done the switch and then maybe switched it back at some time in the near future. But it looks like they have a long-term plan with what is going on with Roman. And I can respect that, because what's the flip side is people always go, WWE is so much hot-shotting and they never have these long-term scenarios. This is a long-term thing, man. It may not have started with Roman. Yeah.
And here's the thing, right? Okay, so now we know it's not Drew that beats him. You're only left with one other guy, really. Or two. You're left with two people to tell the story.
CM Punk?
I'm
just kidding.
Can CM Punk beat him?
I'm totally kidding.
No, but Cody's a big story here, yes. Right? Is Cody going to be the guy that does it? Or will the story be that Roman goes into WrestleMania as the champion and he beats The Rock? What better way to solidify this guy as one of the, you know, possibly the greatest of all time in WWE, you know, WWE speak. I mean, I'm not saying my opinion, but the greatest of all time. He beats The Rock in this mega match in Los Angeles at WrestleMania while he has the titles, and that's the finish. It's this old defeated Rock, you know, going to shake his hand like this, and then he's holding both belts. I mean, that's a story. Whether or not that's the right decision, I don't know how they get there, but who will be the guy? It's not Brock Lesnar, right? We've done this. It's over. It's not going to be Brock. It's obviously not Drew. It's not going to be... Who do they have? Cody?
I love both plans. Obviously, for business, plan A is the one, right, where you have The Rock face Roman. But I like plan B even better. Cody getting the winning the title at a big way in WrestleMania. To me, that's the sort of the romanticism of wrestling part that's really good. But the business is going to be the thing that they look at more, and The Rock is going to bring them more business than anybody possible, right? So that's plan A. That's why it's plan A. But man, they have a great plan B if plan A does not work out
with The Rock
with Cody.
They really do. You know, somebody messaged me this, and I think this is interesting to look at, right? A lot of people are saying, this is all great for AEW. There's eyeballs on them. This is not. You know what happens at this point with casual viewership, not us, that cover this? You get fatigued. Mm-hmm. I don't like dwelling on the negative with anything. I'm not a big negative guy. I don't hate watch stuff. When wrestling gets too negative for me, I check out. I'm not saying that's happening now. You know, I checked out in 2007. It got too wacky for me. I just, mm-hmm. I was so disgusted by wrestling. I didn't want to watch it anymore. People get fatigued when things like this start ruining what they love.
Yeah,
they,
I agree.
They need to reel it in. Right now, WWE has the opposite happening. They turned, I mean, a devastatingly negative in this company, that the Vince McMahon situation. They turned this into a positive for business by, you know, it's all an optics battle. They presented that Triple H is your savior. He's going to give you wrestling back. They did the little things by saying, you know, they say wrestler now and they say belt now. And that was enough.
Everyone
for people
gets
to tune
their
in.
Name. Tommaso Ciampa.
Everybody has a first name. Can you imagine that beautiful name of Tommaso Ciampa? Very, I mean, what a unique name.
Yeah.
He's now Ciampa, you know, but I think this is an optics battle.
Let's end the question here. Or I'm sorry, end the show here with this last question, because I'm utilizing your business brain and your business savviness. How do you think Warner Brothers Discovery thinks about this? Do they think Tony Khan's running a sloppy shop? Or do they ultimately not understand what's going on and they're just like, you know, as long as he's delivering television ratings, that's all we care about?
When as long as I partially that, right? As long as you're in the vicinity of the number, you're not the number that they want you to be at, but you're blowing through that, right? Whatever that expectation is, you want to be above that expectation if you're going to allow stuff like this to happen. But it's never a good thing, especially in a contract year, because all these little things will be used against them when they renegotiate a contract. Let's just say, you know, it's a $100 million property. They want to be a $100 million property a year for TV rights. You, as Warner Discovery, do you have the confidence to give them $100? I'm not saying this is the number, by the way, so nobody report that. Or do you feel confident enough that this product is a $100 million a year property for you? If they are going to have people, you know, willy-nilly just going off script and fighting and doing this, obviously it's not happening on their TV. But it's happening within the company, and that they will use everything to get you as cheap as possible. These aren't you're talking about hundreds of millions of tens of millions of dollars. You're not talking about let's just call it a day and agree on something. So they will use this. I mean, 100%. But Tony needs to, you know, wrestling already has a negative stigma in the eyes of, you know, general sports media. You don't want to look like, you know, the ECW locker room when you're on a major national network. That's the reality. Yes. I this is not a positive. I want people to understand that. Like, this is not any publicity is good publicity. Not like this when you have tens of millions of dollars on the line with your network.
Lamora in the chat room has a great line. WBD letting Ezra Miller run wild, but getting upset with AEW over this would be crazy. I like that.
Yeah, I mean that is interesting, right? I mean, but
yeah.
Two very different situations. You're talking about one individual versus, you know, turmoil in a company. They also, that Ezra Miller stuff is very interesting to me and how they let it. I'm not saying that they are going to punish them. I just think these are, if that was me and I've been in contracts, I've been in salary years where I have to give someone a raise. You look at everything to not give them what they need, what they're asking for. Cause everybody wants more. And it's your job to protect the company and protect their money and their bottom line. So at the end of the day, you know, if this was me and I'm Warner, I'm going to, you know, maybe put it in the heads of people saying, you know, I don't think that we should get rid of them, but I don't think they're worth the money. I'm not, again, I don't know the scenario, but this is how I would handle the situation if I'm trying to save the, you know, money for the company.
Yeah. I mean, we know that David Zaslav is trying to chop billions of dollars out of off of their debt, right? Like, that is his main goal. And I'm not saying that they are or are not on his dartboard, but creating, you know, if this thing were to sort of go public in a much bigger way than just the hardcore wrestling fan base, that I could see that being possibly a negative. Now, I don't think it's going to get there, because I think it'll sort of stay with us, with our kind of fan base, with our group of wrestling fans. But anyway, so I let's end it here. The one thing I want to end this is by saying, I met so many cool people and saw so many cool people for like a second time at the Q&A, and then on the bus to the Now Arena. And I just want to say thanks to everybody who was there and was hanging out and was chit-chatting about this stuff. It was so much fun. And it was a blast. And the only thing that was not perfect about this weekend is that Andrew Zarian was not there.
I was not there. I'm still recovering from this hip injury, but
yeah,
you know, next year, if there is a next year, I'll be there.
All right. So we're going to end that here. Want to thank John Alba. Check out the podcast that he does with Matt Hardy. For Andrew, I'm Double G. We will see you when we see you. Thanks for hanging out the extra 15. Peace out.